were not too many times in Jesus' life when he left Israel and went to a different country. Of course, when he was a baby, Mary and Joseph took him down to Egypt, but he was a baby and did not have ministry yet. We are studying Matthew. We come to Matthew 15, and beginning in verse 21, Jesus left Israel again. And so this is the only time when he was an adult, when he left the borders of Israel and went to another country. He had been out in the middle of nowhere, maybe hearing that John the Baptist had been killed and that Herod was dangerous. But he left the land of Israel, and still, even when he comes back, he stays kind of in the remote areas for a while. So we'll come to Matthew 15, verse 21 through 29, where he goes to what we now call Lebanon. Matthew 15, 21. Jesus went away from there and withdrew from the district of Tyre and Sidon. And a Canaanite woman from that region came out and began to cry out, saying, "Have mercy on me, Lord, Son of David. My daughter is cruelly demon-possessed." But he did not answer her a word. Disciples came and implored him, saying, "Send her away, because she keeps shouting at us." And he answered and said, "I was sent only to the lost sheep of the house of Israel." But she came and began to bow down before him, saying, "Lord, help me." And he answered and said, "It is not good to take the children's bread and throw it to the dogs." But she said, "Yes, Lord, but even the dogs feed on the crumbs which fall from the master's table." Then Jesus said to her, "O woman, your faith is great. It shall be done for you as you wish." And her daughter was healed at once. Tyre and Sidon are still cities, still places. I think the archaeological ruins are a little bit outside the city limits, but there are still cities in what we now call Lebanon. Before Lebanon, Phoenicia. Phoenicia had many cargo ships. It talks about Lydia in the book of Acts, a seller of purple, and the Phoenicians liked to carry garments around. Before Lebanon, Phoenicia, then it was part of the Canaanites, which is referenced here. Lebanon, Phoenicia, Canaan. Now the south part of Canaan became Israel. Joshua invaded and conquered the south part of Canaan, and that became the 12 tribes of Israel. But the north part of Canaan, then Phoenicia, now Lebanon, that stayed Gentile. Here's the Matthew account that we read. It's also in Mark. Mark talks about a little daughter. So, I don't know how little is little, but little daughter. I kind of wonder, reading it, whether the little daughter was with her. It says he was healed right at the moment. So was the little daughter with her? Was she really, really small? Little daughter. Mark 7:25, there's also a reference to in the house. So it seems like she followed Jesus down the road. But Jesus started teaching mostly other Jewish people in a house, and she comes into the house. She calls Jesus the Lord. That word means master. Not so much God yet, but could be, but master. He is the Son of David. So he is the king. He should be the king of Israel. He has power over demons. She knew that. The disciples wanted to send her away, again in Mark, out of the house. Send her out. At first, Jesus was not inclined to help her. He would send out the disciples two by two earlier, and he told them to go to the lost sheep of the house of Israel. And he had told them in Matthew 10 not to go the roads, the way of the Gentiles. Now, he already said, other sheep I have, they're not of this fold. So the Gentiles are going to be saved, but the ministry was not yet. And that's mainly at Pentecost, where, you know, the close of Luke tells them to go into all the world and preach the gospel, in the beginning of Acts chapter 1 at Pentecost, and Jerusalem, Judea, Samaria, to the uttermost parts of the world. It was coming, but it was later. Here at this time of Matthew 15, it was before ministry to the Gentiles, but he says it's not good to take the children's food and give it to the dogs. She remarked that even the dogs sit around and they get the leftovers from the children, or what the children drop. And because the mother believed in Jesus and had great faith from outside of Israel, Jesus healed them right there. Interesting that it's here in the middle of Matthew. Matthew is the most Jewish gospel in the sense of there are all these Old Testament prophecies and quotes. And yet, Matthew begins and ends with the Gentiles. The wise men were probably non-Jewish Gentiles from the East. And that's where Matthew begins. It ends with go into all of the world and give them the gospel and baptize them in the name of the Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. So you have the beginning, the Magi, the wise men, probably non-Jewish. You have in the end, go make disciples of all nations, all the ethna, all the people, beginning and end, and here in the middle. So Jesus' ministry to the Gentiles had not fully started yet, but there is the kind of a sandwich, the literary sandwich in the Gospel of Matthew, beginning and end, go to all the nations, and here in the middle. Jesus was in Lebanon, outside of Israel, very, very rare. Now he's going to come back, and he's still going to go to a remote place. Still doesn't want to be around Herod, the murderer of John the Baptist. Still does not want to be around the public places, but now he leaves Lebanon in verse 29, and he comes back. Departing from there, Tyre and Sidon, Jesus went along by the Sea of Galilee, and having gone up on a mountain, he was sitting there. And large crowds came to him, bringing with them those who were lame, crippled, blind, mute, and many others, and laid them down at his feet, and he healed them. So the crowd marveled as they saw the mute speaking, the crippled restored, the lame walking, the blind seeing, and they glorified the God of Israel. He healed them. The original word came down into English, therapy. He gave them therapy. That's the original word for healing. This happened up on a mountain. Later, the chapter 16, the Pharisees and the Sadducees are going to come to him. And they're going to challenge all these things. They're going to challenge whether he is the Messiah. And yet, in the text we just read, he did all these things. He did all these healings on this list. And they're still coming and asking, are you the Messiah? And they're going to make fun of him. And he will call them evil and adulterous when we get to chapter 16, verse 4. Now I want to spend time on Peter being the foundation of the church and the start of the church. So I don't know whether to read all the next section, but you see in the next section, verses 32 through 39, there is another multiplication of the bread and another multiplication of the fish. It had already taken place. Here is another occasion. If we make a list of Matthew 14, where he multiplied the bread and the fish, he was by the lake. Matthew 15, up on a mountain. Matthew 14, the group was 5,000 men. Matthew 15, verse 38, will say 4,000 men. So about as many people as can witness a miracle saw Jesus do miracles. So in person, now we would have videos, but one would challenge whether the videos are realistic, but 4,000 or 5,000, but Earlier it was 5,000, here is 4,000. Earlier it was 5 loaves and 2 fish, it was a little boy's lunch. Here are 7 loaves. Earlier there were 12 baskets left over, one for each of the disciples to carry off. Here there are 7 baskets left over. They are known to be 2 different occasions, 2 different accounts. We look ahead in chapter 16, verses 9 and 10, lists both of them. Verse 9, 5 loaves and 5,000s. Matthew 16, 10, 7 loaves and 4,000s. So Jesus would do very similar miracles, and he would repeat them. The Gospel of John says that if they recorded all the miracles that he did, that it wouldn't be enough to fit in a book. It's an exaggeration, but John 21, 25, I suppose that not even the whole world could contain the books that would have to be written. So he multiplied the bread and the fish on an earlier occasion. He multiplied again the bread and the fish on this occasion. He did more miracles that are not even in the gospel. He sent the crowds away. Last verse of chapter 15, he went to Magadan. If it sounds like Mary Magdalene, it sounds like that name. They are related to each other. He went to this town on the west side of the lake. So he did all these miracles, but beginning of chapter 16, they're going to say, show us a sign. Well, they already did this earlier. He multiplied the first time the bread and the loaves, and they came up and say, show us a sign. And now he's going to do it again. Show us a sign. Don't know why. I mean, they list in verse 29, and multiplying all the loaves, and now let's read chapter 16, show us a sign. The Pharisees and Sadducees came up in testing Jesus. They asked him to show us a sign from heaven, just like the first one. But he answered and said to them, when it is evening, you will say it will be fair weather, for the sky is red. In the morning, you will say there will be a storm today, for the sky is red and threatening. Do you not know how to discern the appearance of the sky, but cannot discern the signs of the times? An evil and adulterous generation seeks after a sign, and a sign will not be given it except the sign of Jonah. And he left them and went away. Well, there were similar miracles of multiplying the loaves and the fish, and there were similar answers where they said, show us a sign. And Jesus' answer was also similar. So show us a sign. He says, you were only going to see the sign of Jonah. Well, Jonah went missing for a few days, but he was alive. And in Matthew 16, the longer definition of the sign of Jonah is the same thing, that Jesus will be gone for a few days. He will be gone part of Friday and Saturday and the beginning of Sunday. And Jesus will be gone, but he is not dead. He is alive, and he will come back. So the sign of Jonah was defined already, and he says, you will see this, but you're going to miss it. You think you know how the weather is going to turn out, but you don't know how the spiritual storm is going to turn out. You don't know how Jesus' death on the cross is going to turn out. You're missing it. You're missing the significance of it and who he really is. Maybe the storm would also relate to AD 70, where the Romans would destroy the temple. Could they not tell that when the Romans destroyed the temple, that it was because they had rejected Jesus at his first coming? They had rejected the one who was the king, and he was going to start the church and come again, but they don't seem to gather the storm, don't seem to learn about the storm of the cross or the storm of the destruction of Judaism. They don't seem to catch it. He had given them many, many sufficient miracles. Let me review again, Pharisees and Sadducees, and say again that people who don't like each other will come together to oppose Jesus. The Sadducees were very liberal. They were the chief priests. They ruled the temple. But in Acts 23, they did not believe in the afterlife. They did not believe in angels or spirits. And they would say they didn't believe in demons. They didn't believe in humans having a spirit. Their souls will live for it. Sadducees were very, very liberal. Kind of odd that they ran the temple. Didn't really believe anything. Just like ceremonies. Just like public speeches. Just like detention. The Pharisees were very, very conservative. Conservative in the sense that they made up all these rules that weren't even in the Bible. And they followed all these man-made rules. And what you have here again is you have the conservative Pharisees beyond the rules of the Bible. And you have the liberal Sadducees that don't really like each other, but they're going to get along to oppose Jesus. Kind of have that going on right now where the Muslims and the homosexual liberals all get together and protest. It's really kind of odd. You'd think they wouldn't like each other, but they will all get together and protest because they hate Israel. So in Jesus' day, people who didn't like each other would all get together to oppose Jesus. He calls them evil, and he calls them adulterous. Evil would be morality. Adulterous would mean their doctrine is all a mixed up religion, not really doing what is true. And the only sign you're going to get is that Jesus will be gone for 3 days, and he will be alive again after he's missing for 3 days, kind of like the story of Jonah. After this, Jesus went away. So there's a time, what this shows me is there's a time when you try to help people and they reject. And maybe you try to help them again and they reject. But after a while, Jesus would go help people that were respectful and people that were listening, and he would just leave them. And I've kind of had this in ministry over the years, trying to evangelize families of the mentally ill, because they would listen and not give all time to people that would criticize. We've got critics. I remember one of them said, a church shouldn't be writing books. Who gave you the authority to write the books? Well, I didn't do much about that. Just kept doing work. He left them and went away. Try to help, but after a while, he left them and went away. In verses 5 through 12, he continues talking about the Pharisees and the Sadducees, but he's in a boat. And he got in a boat, and the disciples didn't bring any bread. And he was saying, avoid the leaven. That's verse 11. Avoid the leaven, verse 11. And leaven would be something that permeates, something that spreads. Now, it could be positive, but in this illustration, it's negative. Avoid the rotten spreading of the Pharisees and Sadducees. Avoid the rotten doctrine. Avoid the rotten morality. And just leave them alone. I purposely wanted to get to verse 13 and following because, it's kind of like thinking about the Roman church this week. And he's going to build his church on Peter. So I kind of wanted to get to this section for today's message. We will look at verse 13 to start with. Now when Jesus came into the district of Caesarea Philippi, he was asking his disciples, who do people say that the Son of Man is? Well, Son of Man, let's review that. Son of Man comes out of Daniel 7. And the Ancient of Days sits on his throne, and he gives to the Son of Man an eternal kingdom that all people and all nations might serve him. Jesus' favorite title of himself is Son of Man, but it doesn't refer that he's human. It refers to that God will give him the throne of all of the universe. It will be an everlasting kingdom. So he calls himself the Son of Man. Unrelated to the actual story is the place, Caesarea Philippi. It's in Israel, but right on the edge. It's really an interesting place, Caesarea Philippi. It's like a big rock cliff. And the pagans built a temple there. And in Jesus' day, they built a temple unto Caesar there, because Caesar, if he put up with people calling him a god, he was crazy. But anyway, there was a worship of Caesar. Before that, there was a worship of Baal. Before that, the Greeks worshiped the goat god Pan. So here's this rock, you know, rock. Water comes out of the rock, becomes a river. And he's looking at this pagan temple. Who do people say that I am? Now, that's the first question. The second question is, who do you say that I am? But the first question, who do all these other people say that I am? And some say John the Baptist. Remember, Herod Antipas thought that Jesus might have been John the Baptist raised, which is kind of a weird thinking, because he killed John the Baptist and put his head on a platter. So John the Baptist is supernatural, but I went ahead and killed him. That's crazy. Elijah never died, but he went up to heaven in a chariot. So some were saying, here is Elijah coming back down again. Jeremiah. That one is interesting to me, because Jeremiah was always telling them, you're doing bad things. You're doing bad things. You're doing bad things. So if anybody said Jesus is Jeremiah, he must have kept saying the same. You're doing bad things. Here's how we can be forgiven. You're doing bad things. So these are what other people answered. But now in verses 15 and 16, who do you say that I am? Verse 15. Verse 16, Simon Peter answered, you are the Christ, the Son of the living God. Matthew gives the full sentence answer. This whole story is also in Mark and Luke, although they're a little bit shorter. Who am I? You are the Christ. Christ means the anointed one. The Hebrew word is Messiah. So in Hebrew, you are the Messiah. In Greek, you are the Christ. You are the anointed one. And Mark and Luke kind of stop there. And Matthew gives the full long sentence, you are the Son of the living God. Now, the son of something has the characteristics of that something. And so you have the characteristics of God at the very least, but in the Bible, Jesus is the only begotten Son. We who trust in Jesus are the children of God in the sense that we get inheritance. We get inheritance from God, so we get blessings and inheritance from God, but we're not fully the Son of God. Jesus is fully the Son of God. In that sense, he is the only begotten. He's the Son of God in a unique sense, says Peter. Paul, we're like adopted kids, but Jesus is like the full Son of God. That is, he has the characteristics of deity. He is fully God. And here, Peter figured that out. And so now there are blessings in the very next verse, verse 17. As Jesus said to him, blessed are you, Simon Barjona, because flesh and blood did not reveal this to you, but my Father who is in heaven. There are two words for blessed. One means to say something nice. The other one is happy. This one's happy. I'm not sure why in English they never translate Makarios happy. They never translate it happy. But it's saying, happy are you because you understand that Jesus is God. Happy you will be. Try not to give too much time to it, but Bar Jonah is Aramaic. Ben is the Hebrew word for son. Bar is Aramaic. Very often it is believed that Jesus and the disciples spoke Aramaic. They probably could read the Bible in Hebrew, read the Old Testament, but they spoke Aramaic. Bar is Aramaic. Maranatha is Aramaic. So they spoke this language. The Jewish people got it while they were in Babylon, and they might be able to read the Hebrew Old Testament, but they spoke Aramaic. Anyway, you'll be happy because you understand this. And now, verse 18. I say to you that you are Petros, and upon this Petra, rock, I will build my church, and the gates of Hades will not overpower it. Well, are there two different meanings? There are two different words. You are Petros, and upon this Petra, I will build my church on what you just said. I will build my church upon the rock that Jesus is the Son of God. So it could be, because they're two different words, it could be, I will build my church upon the doctrinal rock, upon the teaching you just gave, that Christ, the Anointed One, is the Son of God. Could mean that. Is it the other definition? You are Peter, and upon you and the other apostles, I will build my church. It could mean that too. It actually could mean either way. Although I will say it's got nothing to do with the following popes over the centuries. You know, if it is Peter, you are Peter, and upon the foundation of the other apostles and prophets, I will build my church. Well, there are no apostles now. An apostle had to have seen the risen Lord. When they were looking for a replacement from Judas, they only had a list of people who had seen the risen Lord, Acts 1:22. Paul says, am I not an apostle? Have I not seen the risen Lord? So the apostles are very, very important. I do agree they were the foundation of the church. And it could mean that. They were the foundation of the church, but there aren't any today. There aren't any apostles today. So in the early church, there were all these churches, and the one at Rome lasted the longest because the Muslims limited all the other ones. Antioch, Jerusalem, Alexandria. They limited them down, even Athens. But the Roman church is very historical, but it's not like the popes have the same authority as Peter. If we interpret it as Peter, you are the rock, it's you are the apostles. I build the church on the apostles. Or I build the church on the doctrine that he is the Son of God. And both those are actually true. Until elsewhere. He built his church upon the apostles. There are none today. We have to look at what the Bible says that the apostles taught. But also, he built the church upon the doctrine that Jesus is God the Son. They're actually both true. Here is the first reference in the New Testament to church. Ekklesia. Ek, out, like exit. Kaleo, the called out people, the people that are called out of the world, the church, the ecclesia. And the church is actually doing the fighting here. It's not like the church will be attacked by hell, it's the other way around. The reference in this sentence, verse 18, is the church will attack hell. The church will oppose evil. The church will oppose falsehood. Verses 19 and 20, the keys of the kingdom. That's kind of like saying, whatever you apostles teach, I will reinforce. I will make sure your promises come true. I will make sure your warnings come true. if you promise that all who trust in Jesus will be out of prison, I will make sure that they are out of their spiritual prison. If you warn that all who reject Jesus will be in prison forever, I will make sure that warning comes true. So, actually, however we interpret verse 18, that the church is built upon the apostles, and the church is built upon the doctrine that Jesus is the Son of God, and Jesus will make sure that the promises come true of salvation, he will make sure that the warnings come true of punishment. When the musicians